This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, the Braves winning game one. They won the battle. Hopefully, it didn't cost them the war over time. Plus, they took advantage of one of their real advantages in this series. How about that sentence? Took advantage of their advantage. They cashed in on one of their sneaky advantages in this series. Get to all that coming up. Plus, I've been meaning to touch on the Tom Brady story this week, so I do want to circle back to that later on. Bring back our transfer portal conversation from yesterday and a huge weekend in college football. This last weekend, a little lackluster. This weekend, not the case. Got plenty to try to squeeze in over the next hour. The Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years, and they're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., Baker Roofing provides residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, they were founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. Check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Or you can always find the podcast available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page or through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can find the podcast through the free app as well. Braves won Game 1 of the World Series last night against the Astros. And already, regardless of what happens tonight, the Braves already accomplished their job. The goal that they set out on, or at least should have, on their way to Houston. That doesn't mean you take tonight off, you don't try to win. But if you do lose tonight, you can fall back on the fact that, you know what, that's okay. We split in Houston, that's what we needed to do, because you steal home field advantage. And now you have the opportunity, maybe it's pie in the sky, but you have the opportunity to clinch at home. Could you wrap this up in five games? That would be nice. You'll at least have that opportunity, though. Originally, going into this series, you figure if it's going to be a long series, and I still think it's going to be, but if that's the case, you're going to have to find a way to clinch in Houston. When they clinch against the Dodgers, because they had home field advantage, they could clinch at home. Now, after winning last night, you give yourself home field advantage, you could try to clinch at home. And when getting ready for this World Series yesterday, you know, we broke it down piece by piece for this matchup. And I told you where I thought the advantages were for each team. I thought the Astros had the advantage at the plate. The Braves had the advantage on the mound. I thought the managers are a wash. And I thought the rules really benefited the Atlanta Braves. So as you look at game one last night, it's only one game, but how did things play out last night? Well, my concern for the Braves offensively was that they were at the disadvantage in large part because of the difference in strikeouts. Nobody has struck out more than the Braves this postseason, almost a third of their at-bats. Nobody struck out less than the Astros during the season. And yet, last night, the Braves struck out 11 Astros compared to 12 Braves striking out. A one-strikeout difference. The Astros struck out more than 10 times for the team that strikes out the fewest amount of times. Meanwhile, the Braves had 12 hits, 6 runs on the road, got on the board right away. Bats were on a problem last night. In fact, it was the bats that put the game away almost immediately. Up 5-0 in the third, doesn't matter that Charlie Morton's come out of the game. Right? You feel a lot better with a 5-0 lead because of the job done by your offense. And the Astros, meanwhile, their big bats that you have to count on, well, they went hitless. Altuve, Bregman, Correa went a combined 0 for 12 with 6 strikeouts, leaving 6 on base last night. That's the difference in the game. The Astros scored only 2 runs, the fewest they've scored in any playoff game all year. Why? Because your 3 big bats went hitless, striking out half the time. Jose Altuve struck out 3 times for the first time in his postseason career. He's something like 2 for his last 26 this postseason. And then you look at the pitching. And that kind of goes along the same lines. Because good pitching beats good hitting. And it was the good pitching of the Braves last night that beat the good hitting of the Astros and shut them down. And I thought going into this series that the Braves did have the advantage when it came to pitching. And last night, that was the case. Even with Charlie Morton having to come out in the third inning because of an unplanned injury, the bullpen picked up the slack. They were very good. And as I already said, the Braves struck out 11 Astros, something that doesn't happen too often. Held them to their fewest runs scored all postseason and did it in their building in the World Series. With your starter having to come out in the third, that was big time. But now the concern is, and we talked about this earlier with Chelsea Jane, who covers Major League Baseball for the Washington Post. You can find that conversation on demand in the podcast. But the concern is, you hope you didn't just win the battle last night while costing yourself the war down the road in the loss of Charlie Morton. And that may sound a little extreme, right? They won game one. The series is just beginning. But that's a big-time loss to miss out on Charlie Morton, who will now be out for the rest of the World Series and should be good to go for the start of next season. He's going to be a free agent, by the way, going to be 38 next year, coming off of this injury. If you're a Braves fan, I'm sure you want Charlie back, but I'm curious to see what it's going to be like for him this offseason. 38 years old, coming off an injury, has pitched in the postseason almost every year the last couple of years, so extra innings on that arm. He's pitched well. But what kind of market is there going to be for Charlie? Is it going to be too pricey after this season? Are you going to be able to get him at a bargain? Can he go somewhere else? We'll see what happens. We'll figure that out in the coming weeks. In the meantime, you have to figure out replacing Charlie Morton in this series. Because while I thought the Braves had the advantage on the mound, and I still believe they have the advantage in the bullpen, that doesn't change. But what could change potentially is the starting rotation. The advantage that the Braves had with their starting rotation, at minimum, may not be as big of an advantage as it was just 24 hours ago. Because the reason why the Braves had such an advantage with the starting rotation is the depth. They had three good starters. The Astros don't. I don't know if the Astros even have two good starters. Quite frankly, I don't know if the Astros even have one good starter. Valdez pitched well his last time out and then got knocked around yesterday. Garcia pitched well his last time out but got knocked around before that. We'll see how he does on Friday night in Game 3. Greinke can only give you an inning or two. And the pitcher tonight, whose name I don't even want to try to pronounce for the Astros, he got knocked around in the ALCS. They don't have that go-to ace. They don't have a healthy Zach Greinke. Their ace is injured. Lance McCullers, right? Justin Verlander as well. So the Braves, you had that depth that even without Soroka, even without your theoretical ace, you still had three arms you could rely on where the Astros just simply don't. But now you lose one of those three arms. You at least got him to help you win game one last night. That helps. But now you don't have Charlie Morton moving forward. You go Morton, Fried, Anderson, which is a better third option than anything the Astros can throw. But now you don't have that third option. And as you get to game four, who pitches then? Is it a bullpen game? Chelsea Jane last hour said, could be Drew Smyly, who pitched well last series. Maybe you do that in game four. But then, as you move forward, all right, do you do a bullpen game? Game five? If not, do you bring back Fried on short rest? What if there's a game six? Do you bring back Ian Anderson on short rest? Do you go bullpen game there? Do you save Anderson for a potential game seven? What if Drew Smyly doesn't pitch as well in game four? There's a reason why you haven't trusted him with a start. I mean, I know essentially he kind of was like a quasi-starter last round out of the bullpen, but there's a reason why he's the afterthought. It could potentially be a big loss as we get to the middle of this series. Additionally, when you were hoping to get some good innings from Morton last night, now you had to use your bullpen for almost seven innings to begin the series. And that was not the plan or the hope going in. But you lose Charlie Morton, who's been pitching well, and on top of it, he's the veteran with the World Series experience. Fried, Ian Anderson, those are young guys. But Charlie Morton, 16 career starts in the playoffs, fourth most innings pitched the last 5 years in the playoffs, 3.3 ERA in the playoffs, was pitching well last night. So that is also hard to replace. Not just having that body for another start this series, but having that experience and that success in what could be a very big game. If you were going to bring Morton back game four, game five, maybe you go game four and then even save him a little bit to bring him back in a potential game seven, you now lose that. And then there was the sneaky advantage that I said the Braves have going into this series when we discussed this yesterday, and it's the DH. And I don't know if people thought about it, but because the NL teams, you gain something, the AL teams, you lose something when you have to go on the road. And most NL teams don't have anything to add. You just throw something in. It's like if you have a gift card and you go to the store, and that gift card, you use it to cash out, and then they tell you, like, oh, there's $2 left. And you just grab, like, a pack of gum or something, right? Something you didn't need, but you just throw it in there because you got $2 to spend. What are you going to do? You're not going to save $2 and come back to that place. Right? So let me grab this thing. Or back in the day when people didn't want to break big bills for you. Nowadays, people don't use cash so much. Maybe this is still the situation. Right? But back in the day, they don't want to break a 50 for you or 100. So they tell you, you got to buy a few more things. So what are you doing? You're just grabbing random stuff. Like, okay, how much is this candy bar? Get me one of those things. All right, are we at enough money? Is my bill high enough where you could break this 100 for me at the gas station? That's similar to NL teams when you get a DH. You're just grabbing somebody and throwing them in. Okay, we got an extra spot in the lineup. All right, put this guy in. The 220 hitter that doesn't play too often. He's just our speed guy or our backup infielder. You could play now because we got an extra spot for you. But for the Braves, it's quite the advantage when that extra spot can be filled by Jorge Soler. And we saw that three pitches in last night, becoming the first ever batter to begin a World Series with a home run. And that sets the tone for the whole series, especially last night. And the Braves never looked back, and they got rolling. And so to be able to have Soler not only in the lineup, but he's also your leadoff hitter, and he does a good job leading off, being able to be there because of the DH. And the Braves scored first off that home run. And the Braves especially, but all teams, this postseason have been great when they score first. In fact, the team that scores first has gone 25-7 in the postseason. A lot of that winning done by the Braves. When you score first, this time of year, sometimes that's all it takes. And so to be able to get Soler in there and have him bat leadoff and be as impactful as he is, that's huge. And when you go to Atlanta this weekend for the middle games of this series, the Astros are going to have to make a choice. They're going to have to sit somebody from their normal lineup, and they're going to have to pick their poison. Do you want to sacrifice a bat, or do you want to sacrifice some glove? Because that decision will probably involve Alvarez, who cannot field, but he can swing it, and you're going to have to make the choice. You're going to want to keep his bat in the lineup, but then it's going to cost you a little bit defensively, and you hope that doesn't come back to bite you later on in the actual game. You hope they don't hit the ball his way. You hope he's not involved in a close situation trying to field the ball late in the game. But you're going to have to give something up. For the Braves, they don't. And when they go on the road to Houston, they get to add something. Jorge Soler. And it's just remarkable the job done by Alex Anthopoulos, especially when you look at last night's game. Morton only got you 7 outs, but he was very good until he got injured. Right? So you signed 37-year-old Charlie Morton, and you won that battle. I'm a Red Sox fan. I was upset when he chose the Braves. Or it came down to the Braves and the Red Sox. He chose the Braves. I wish the Red Sox got him. They could have used him last week. And then you go out and you got Will Smith, and he gets the final outs last night. And then midseason this year, you get Soler and you get Duvall, and they hit the two homers last night. And the Braves have set the record for most homers in a postseason by players they got from other teams, which was after they set the same record for the regular season this year. And you add Jock Peterson, who's like the glue guy. Right, he's great for that clubhouse, and he has playoff experience, and he has some big hits, and he's got the pearls and the blonde hair going, and that's huge for the team. And since making these moves, they have played at a 105-win pace, which is third best in baseball over the course of a full season. This is no longer some 88-win team that was under 500 until August. They got a makeover. This is a completely new team that's been playing great baseball for the last 3 months. And last night was a big-time win to now take over the series 1-0 with a chance to take a commanding 2-0 lead tonight because they have the better pitching matchup. And while I was wrong about the favorite tonight, the Astros are still favored. I was correct that the Braves for the World Series have now become favored. They were the underdogs heading into the series. They're now favored in the eyes of Vegas to finish this thing off. That's how big Game 1 was last night. You flip the whole series. You gain home field advantage. You start off with a win. We'll see what happens tonight, but at minimum, you head back home tied 1-1. You play well enough, you keep this series from even going back to Houston after tonight. Big-time win for the Braves last night. You just hope that this weekend, right by the time you reach Game 4, Game 5, Charlie Morton being unavailable doesn't cost you in a big way. As Jeff Schultz summed it up for The Athletic, the sky keeps falling and yet the team keeps winning. It is somewhat remarkable how much this team is able to bounce back like that, how they're unable. You can't break their stride. You can't stop them. They just keep steamrolling ahead, and they did it again last night. Now, as I've been saying when it comes to this World Series, you know, good versus evil. The Braves, this year at least, seem to be an easy team to root for. I've jumped on the bandwagon. I'm not a Braves fan. I never disliked the Braves, but I've jumped on their bandwagon. I hope they win it all because if you're not an Astros fan, you're probably rooting against the Astros. And this idea that this World Series could vindicate the Astros to me is a complete, it's utter nonsense. And now the Astros, since that cheating scandal when they used to bang on trash cans, now are 0-5 in home games in the World Series. And so tell me it wasn't impactful, please. They scored 2 runs last night and struck out 11 times. Their big hitters all went 0-12, and they're not banging on trash cans in a World Series game. Funny how that works. But yes, go on and tell me how it didn't make a difference and how we should forgive the Astros because they're back in the World Series once again. So if you're not an Astros fan, I don't know how you can pull for the Astros. But they did one of these studies to figure out which states are rooting for which teams. And there are only 3 states that are rooting for the Astros. One of them you can obviously guess. Texas, of course. The Astro fans are pulling for the Astros. The second state you could probably figure out pretty quickly as well. It's just the bordering state, Louisiana. You could probably guess that, I don't know, maybe an Oklahoma, maybe a Louisiana, one of those states around them would also be rooting for the Astros. It's a bordering state. Louisiana, right, that's still their team. You root for the Texas teams. You don't have a baseball team, so you pull for the Astros. But what's that third state? Because it's not a bordering state to Texas. What's the third state that's pulling for the Astros in this World Series? I never would have guessed this. I guess it makes a little sense, but it also doesn't. The third state is Delaware. Now, people immediately point to the Phillies. But the problem is, right, because if you're a Phillies fan, you hate the Braves. So you can't root for the Braves in this World Series. You'd rather have a bunch of cheaters win the World Series than one of your rivals. But here's the problem. The Phillies don't play in Delaware. Pennsylvania's rooting for the Braves. So what's your problem, Delaware? If Pennsylvania can look past that rivalry to root for Atlanta, how come you can't if you live in Delaware? Right? Like New York is pulling for the Braves. I'm sure Mets fans hate the Braves. Yet, at least based off of this one study, New York baseball fans are rooting for the Braves to win. Florida, I don't know how much people really care about the Marlins and their divisional teams, but Florida, they're pulling for the Braves. There's a lot of Braves fans in Florida, so that helps. But you get the idea. All the other teams, the Washington Nationals fans, they seem to be pulling for the Braves, at least enough people in the area to outdo all of the Nationals fans that may want the Braves to lose. Every state outside of those three are pulling for the Braves. The Braves have become America's team this week as baseball fans hope they can take down these cheaters. Outside of Texas, Louisiana, and for some reason, Delaware. Pennsylvania, they're not pulling for the Astros because of the Phillies. Why are you, Delaware? And I've gone on record many times. I've always said Delaware is my least favorite state. I haven't been to every state. I've been to the majority. Delaware was the worst. Had a bad experience. It was terrible going through Delaware. And this is right on par. This is on brand for Delaware. Rooting for the cheating Houston Astros for who knows what reason. Just because the Phillies play somewhat close to them, and the Phillies and the Braves are in the same division, so they can't apparently root for the Braves. Or there's just a large Astros fan base in Delaware. Have they ever had like a minor league team there? What's the connection with Delaware to the Astros? Another reason for me to dislike Delaware and never go back there. Texas, Louisiana, and Delaware, the 3 states pulling for the Astros. Otherwise, everybody else is behind the Braves, hoping they can finish this thing off. Coming up, we do have to touch on the Tom Brady situation from this week because we haven't gotten to that yet this week. And also, we'll circle back to a conversation yesterday and even over the last couple of weeks about the transfer portal as well. It's a big weekend in college football, too. We'll start to look ahead. Plenty to do here over the rest of this hour. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Touch on this Tom Brady situation here on the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Been meaning to get to this the last couple of days. But we'll just spend a moment on it here this afternoon. Let me tell you that the ESPN's ninth annual Cox vs. Tigers golf tournament is coming up in just a couple of weeks. Wednesday, November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving, over at the Links at Stono Ferry. It is the tournament for all sports fans in Charleston every November. 36 teams and award prizes for closest to the pin, longest drive, hole-in-one, best dressed foursome. Come dressed in your Carolina or Clemson gear. Every foursome who signs up will receive the ninth annual Cox vs. Tigers t-shirt, complimentary beer, soft drinks, plus lunch and a barbecue dinner. There'll be trophies for first place, second place, and last place at the ninth annual Cox vs. Tigers golf tournament. Wednesday, November 24th, right before Thanksgiving, at the Links at Stono Ferry. Sign up today at charlestonsportsradio.com, and we hope to see you out there. So a lot was made of this Tom Brady football situation, and we didn't have time to get to this yesterday, and figure we'd spend a moment on it here now because a lot it's been discussed all week long about Brady throws for a record-breaking 600 touchdown on Sunday. Mike Evans doesn't realize. He gives the football to the fan. I'm sure you are familiar with the situation by now. The fan then gives the football back. You know, they come to him and ask, hey, Brady wants the football. And so he's a Buccaneers fan. He gives the football up. Then it comes to, well, what is he going to get for giving up said football? Because the football is believed to be worth, potentially, according to those in the know, north of $700,000. So this fan gives up the football, $700K, out the window. Now, no, it didn't necessarily belong to him. And it's almost like it's not as bad because you're not stealing. But, you know, like if you find someone's wallet, you want to be a good person and try to return the wallet instead of keeping the money in the wallet. Right? You want to do the nice thing, the right thing. And this is kind of the right thing. I mean, it's Brady. It's a record. It was him making the play. Mike Evans handed you the football. I think anybody could understand the situation that maybe you do the right thing. You give the football back instead of being greedy, keep it to yourself, and eventually one day sell it for money. Right? It has some special meaning to Tom and maybe his family, and he requested the football. And you could say, I'm going to keep it. I want to sell this thing. This is going to pay for my kids' college tuition. I'm going to get a new house. I'm going to erase all my debt, buy a new car with this football, apparently worth $700,000 and then some. But Byron Kennedy was the fan who was given the football. He did the right thing. He gave the football back. Here's what's interesting, though, is the deal that they struck. I think he got screwed. Now, Tom Brady, when he was on the Manning cast Monday night, said that the fan screwed up the negotiation tactics by handing over the football first. Anybody knows, right? You want to drive a hard bargain. You want to negotiate. You hold on to that football that you're negotiating over. Once he gave it up, he had no leverage. At that point, Brady and the Buccaneers could have said, hey, screw you. You just gave us the football. Brady, we're not giving you anything anymore. But, of course, a football team wouldn't do such a thing. And the bad publicity, right? And they're trying to be nice. So they struck a deal with Byron Kennedy, who gave up this football. Now, Byron Kennedy was on NFL Network. He was interviewed by Andrew Siciliano talking about this whole situation, about the negotiations, the things he got. Did he realize it was a record-setting football? Here's what Byron Kennedy had to say about the whole situation on Sunday.
So far, I have a game ball and a gift card. Supposedly, the Bucks are trying to do something nice for me, but I haven't talked to them yet.
Did you know it was the 600th in the moment?
No, not in the moment, I didn't. I was just so happy to get a touchdown ball from Mike Evans. I had no idea how significant it actually was.
Byron, if you knew, what would you have done?
I don't think it would have changed anything. People are saying that I could have made $500,000 or something like that. But had I kept the ball, I wasn't going to sell it. I would have sat in my office at home and would have been a different memorabilia item. So I probably would have done the same thing.
You've heard like that, obviously. Yeah, which is you should have just taken the ball, run out of the stadium, and hid.
Yeah. I didn't drive there either, so I would have had to wait for an Uber outside. That sounds a little scary to me.
Byron, take me through the negotiation.
So that guy came up and basically said, can we get the ball back? And my first reaction was no. I told him, you can't have the ball back. I'd never gotten a football like this. This is the coolest thing ever. No, we went back and forth a little bit, and he's basically saying Tom Brady really wants the football. So, like I said earlier, you can't say no to Tom Brady. He's asking for his record-breaking 600 touchdown football back. He's the one who earned it. I just got lucky, happened to be there at the right time.
That's the fan, Byron Kennedy. Now, this is an interesting debate because, of course, we would all say, sitting in this position, like, oh, yeah, of course you give the football back and they'll give you some jerseys and tickets, whatever. You know, you don't want to be that jerk that keeps the football. But if you did know the situation, if you did know that was a record-breaking touchdown pass and that money or that football would be worth potentially close to $1 million, isn't that hard to give up? Right. Think of he's a 29-year-old. When he was doing that interview, it looked like he was in like scrubs. I don't know if he's a nurse or he works in a hospital or what. I have no idea. Maybe it was just a shirt that looked like it. I don't know what he does for a living. I have no idea. How much do you make in your personal life, though? Now imagine you have a chance to make a quick $700,000. It's the right thing to give the football back to Brady. But maybe you have some student loans you're paying off. Maybe you have a newborn at home, right? Suddenly you got more money. You're going to have to pay for your kid's college in a few years. Maybe you're looking to buy a new – who knows what anyone's situation is financially or your living situation. And imagine you just get handed this football. And if you had the wherewithal to know, hey, that's number 600, this could be worth something. And if you really knew, like, hey, this could be worth – they tell me, the experts tell me over at Steiner Sports who do this for a living, they tell me that football could sell for almost $800,000. If nothing else, you got to drive a real hard bargain with the Buccaneers. I think the best thing that they did, as he mentions in that clip, they came over, asked for the football. There wasn't much of a negotiation, right? Get that football quickly from him, and then you don't have to worry about it so much. Now, the deal that they apparently struck, you heard from Byron there in that interview yesterday about what he actually has gotten so far from the Buccaneers. But apparently the deal, what they agreed to, two signed jerseys and a signed helmet from Tom Brady himself, plus a signed Mike Evans jersey and his game cleats, two season tickets for the rest of this season and next year, and a $1,000 credit at the Buccaneers team store. Brady also said on Monday night on the Manning cast, and I don't know if he was joking, but he said he's giving him a Bitcoin. I have no idea how much that works. People tell me that a Bitcoin that's worth like $65,000, is that true? I have no idea. If so, that's pretty nice. But I don't know how that stuff works. I'm not familiar with Bitcoins. And I don't know if Brady was just saying that like tongue-in-cheek, joking around, or if he was being serious, he's giving him a Bitcoin. I don't know. But even so, even if that's $65,000, that's the number I saw, that's not $650,000. And do I really care about the Brady jerseys? I mean, you could sell those, I guess, for a good amount of money. But do I really care to have all that? What am I going to do with a signed Tom Brady jersey? I don't really care. If I'm that fan, the only thing I'm asking for, because I would give the football up too, if I knew it was worth $800,000, I'd probably be a little stubborn in giving up that football. I'd want to make sure I get a good deal out of it. But, you know, it's not my football. They handed it to me, and it's Tom Brady. I'll give it back to him. But the only thing I would ask for, really, I don't care about the merch. I don't care about your signed jerseys. None of that stuff. All I want, season tickets for the rest of my life. And over the course of my life, knock on wood, right, maybe that equals the amount of money. I have no idea how much Buccaneers season tickets are. Just give me tickets for every game for the rest of my life. That's what I would request. I don't want your signed jerseys. I don't want your team merchandise. I don't want a Bitcoin. None of that. Just give me free tickets for the rest of my life. That would be my negotiation. And I have no idea if they would do that. They gave him tickets for the rest of this year and next year, probably in the nosebleeds. That's fine. You could stick me in the nosebleeds. Just give me free tickets to every game for the rest of my life. When I worked in minor league baseball, the team I worked for did a promotion. And I think others have as well, that if you got a tattoo of the team logo, maybe the River Dogs with their history, maybe they've done this before. But if you got a tattoo of that team's logo, you could get free tickets for every game for the rest of your life. Right? And that was pretty sweet. And a handful of people actually did it. And so we always honored them. We would give them free tickets anytime they'd show up. We knew who they were. Oh, yeah, sure. You want to come to the game tonight? Here's your tickets. So that's what I would want without having to get the tattoo. I'd say, sure, Tom, here's the football. Just make sure I have tickets for me anytime I want to go to a Buccaneers game the rest of my life. That's what I would request. That's the one thing. Don't give me anything else. No free merch, no autographs, nothing, just free tickets. That's all I need. By the way, the brutal ending to the story about the minor league situation, we then changed teams a few years back and therefore had a new name, new logo, new everything, new jerseys, all that sort of stuff. So the logo that all these people got tattooed no longer was the logo. That team didn't exist anymore. And it was a big drama, a lot of drama at the time about if we were going to continue to honor it. And I believe we did, which was probably the right thing to do. but sucks for those people. Right? Talk about getting a fast one pulled on them. The original idea was, hey, you get this tattoo, you could get free tickets to every game the rest of your life. And a handful of people went out and did it, like four or five. And then fast forward a few years later, and they say, ah, actually, we're changing the logo. We're changing the team. Sorry, no longer applies anymore. And now you're stuck with that tattoo. So I believe we did honor the tattoos and continue to get free tickets. But now it's a tattoo of a team that doesn't even exist anymore. All I would want was free tickets. And by the way, right, the Buccaneers give them $1,000, but it's $1,000 to the team store. Can you really spend $1,000 at the team store? I mean, I guess you could. If you're a Panthers fan or like a Gamecock Clemson fan, right, can you go to the store and would you be willing? Would there be enough stuff there? I mean, you could use it over time. How long would it take for you to spend $1,000 at one of your team's merchandise stores? Could you do it all in like a month, a year? Would that last you a decade? You just buy a thing here or there? How big are you into your team's merch? For me, it'd probably last a while. But that's the old catch, just like, you know, when you get store credit instead of your money back. Sure, we'll give you the money, but you're going to have to spend it here. That's the Buccaneers. We'll give you $1,000, but you're just going to have to spend it here. Now, it's no cost for you, but, you know, it's kind of tacky. You get $1,000 worth of Buccaneers merchandise. Like, oh, okay, that's great. Or you could have $800,000, put your kids through college, pay off your debt, even, you know, put down a down payment on a new home, all for a football. Byron Kennedy, 29-year-old Buccaneers fan. That's what he's working on right now. Two signed jerseys and a helmet from Brady, signed Mike Evans jersey and his game cleats, $1,000 worth of Buccaneers merchandise and tickets for the rest of this season and next year, and apparently a Bitcoin as well. It's easy to say when you're not in the situation, yeah, of course I give up the football. But if you knew in that situation that what you were holding in your hands could potentially be worth over $700,000, do you hand it back that easily? Because if you knew the situation, I don't think it's that easy of a decision to make. Coming up, we'll circle back to what we were talking about with the transfer portal yesterday in college football. And also, speaking of college football, it's a huge weekend for college football. Some big-time games, especially in the Big Ten. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the impact of the transfer portal on college football. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Game 2 of the World Series is coming up tonight. 8:09 first pitch once again. You can hear it right here on ESPN Radio 98.9 FM. Therefore, the coaches' show will be over on the city, 102.1 FM tonight, with head coach Brent Thompson of the Citadel. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as why I thought last night, despite the Braves' win, was another good example of one of the big problems in baseball, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget also that coming up on Monday, that's the start of the FanTalk Families campaign this holiday season, which will go all the way until December 10th. And the Radiothon will be on Thursday, November 18th, the 12-hour Radiothon for Bobby and the Ronald McDonald House to help benefit them. November 18th, always a special day around here. And for right now, they're looking for businesses who would like to donate any goods or services that could be used to auction or used as auction items for said Radiothon. So if interested, please get in touch with Bobby and help if you're able to. Last year, even with the pandemic going on, they were still able to raise over $30,000. And so they hope to top that this year. It's one of the best things that even occurs around here. The 2021 Fan Talk Families campaign for the Ronald McDonald House and the 32 families that stay there. It begins Monday. This upcoming Monday runs into December, but the big day, that 12-hour Radiothon, coming up right in the middle on Thursday, November 18th. If you ever miss anything from the show, like I said, you can always catch it on demand. Yesterday, we were talking about the transfer portal with a set of data I saw looking at recruiting classes and players brought in over the last 5 years. And in Clemson in particular, in their case, they're the last remaining big-time program to not accept any transfers yet. others have. Alabama with 8 transfers over the last 5 years. Oklahoma is up around 20. You know, Clemson's at 0. And so this has been a conversation the last couple of weeks, and especially the last couple of days. And a listener named Oscar reached out to the show with an article from 24/7 Sports about the transfer portal and said that in the 2020-2021, the last cycle of the transfer portal, there were 2,646 transfers. Around 90 or so made the list in this article put together by 24/7 Sports, so that is less than 4% of total transfers who have made an impact on college football. Also, as Oscar continues to write, most were 2 or 3 stars while also transferring from smaller schools. What does it convey to the players that you recruited that are in your locker room? The transfer portal is a crapshoot any way you look at it. It is, but so too is recruiting, I would say, in terms of what you're getting and how they're going to live up to those expectations, much like DJ this year. Now, he looks like a complete bust despite being a highly touted recruit and someone Clemson was really excited about and even played really well last year when he stepped in. Fast forward to this year, not so much. Right, that seems to be a bit of a crapshoot as well. A lot of these kids, developing them. Right, the great line in Moneyball, which was about baseball, but it still applies, when they're talking in the movie about Billy Beane's career and how high he was drafted out of high school and he didn't pan out. And as they said, it's just tough to predict 18-year-old kids which way they're going to go. It's a little bit different in baseball because they're professionals at 18, and you hope to develop them and, you know, you're trying to guess what they're going to be like in 12 years in some cases. In college football, it's a little bit of a smaller timeline. You just have to figure out what they're going to be like in the next 4 years. And they're not professionals. They're trying to become professionals. So it's a little bit different, but the genesis, the main idea still applies that it is hard to predict 16, 17-year-old kids that you are recruiting that aren't developed yet, that are maybe still going through puberty, that haven't been out on their own, they're not mature, they haven't had these responsibilities, whatever it is, you have no idea which way they're truly going to go. And most recruits work out, but not always. So I think it's always a crapshoot. Same idea with the transfer portal. You may bring in somebody in the transfer portal, and they may be a total bust for you, just like you may recruit somebody, and they may not work out for you. But in regards to this article from 24/7 Sports, look, we're getting ready for a big weekend in college football, mostly in the Big Ten. You have Ohio State, which has not been tested since the Oregon loss, that will be somewhat tested against Penn State. Now, there's a reason why Ohio State is favored by almost 20, and I do think they blow out Penn State, but it is a ranked team, and it's a big-time game and two big brands. So Ohio State-Penn State, it's at 7:30 on ABC for a reason. It is still a big game. And also in the Big Ten, you have Michigan and Michigan State, a top 10 matchup between those two, squaring off for the first time since the 60s in which they were both in the top 10, right? Certainly a game of interest. You have the rivalry in Georgia-Florida this weekend. That's a big game on Saturday. Even though Florida isn't quite the same team, you know, they still get up for that one. Even something like Ole Miss-Auburn with two top 20 teams is intriguing. UNC is not in the conversation this year, but, you know, UNC Notre Dame is interesting as well. But there's some big games in college football this weekend that could disrupt things. Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, Florida, Georgia. There's a chance that this whole playoff conversation or the rankings could really go sideways this weekend. But when you look at these teams, for Georgia, JT Daniels has returned to practice. He's supposed to be their starting quarterback. And if they're going to win a national championship this year, I think it's going to take JT Daniels. He was a transfer. The last couple of national champions used transfers at the quarterback position outside of Mac Jones. Michigan State, the way they turned their season around. Mel Tucker brought in more transfers than any other program. And then if you look at this list from 24/7 Sports and other people that they mention, for Cincinnati, their star running back is a transfer. For Alabama, their leading tackler is a transfer. For Oklahoma, they use 4 guys who have been impactful in the transfer portal. Ohio State hasn't gotten a ton of impact from the transfer portal this year, but their kicker, who hasn't missed a kick yet, that's kind of important, right, the kicker. Michigan had their number one receiver come in as a transfer. Oregon, the number 7 team in the country, their quarterback is a transfer. They also had one of their wide receivers come in as a transfer, so on and so forth. Do all of them have a huge impact? Of course not, just like all recruits won't have a huge impact. But you can at least try to take the chance to help yourself out, to plug a hole. That's the idea. I would use the transfer portal as a side to my recruiting. Save some spots for the high school kids, save some spots for a couple of transfers, and let them come in and compete. And in Clemson's case in particular, because that's what has brought up this whole conversation, the offensive line, you had some good options in that transfer portal, the offensive line, that you could bring in who were experienced and could help you out in that big area of weakness instead of just relying on the inexperience you have on the roster that hasn't worked out. Will those transfer portals always work out? Of course not. But just like recruits won't always work out, you take a chance. Why not take advantage of something that's there for you and see if it works out? And lastly, in terms of the message it sends to the other guys, well, I wouldn't take a scholarship away. I don't like that. I don't like when new coaches come in and they don't honor scholarships. They strip kids who are already there of their scholarships. I don't like that stuff. So in that sense, I agree. I wouldn't want to bring somebody in that boots somebody else off the team. But instead, what I would do is supplement my recruiting with the transfer portal. It's what I've always said. If you have, just throw out a number, 18 scholarships, 18 spots open, okay, well, let me try to keep two or three open for the transfer portal. 15 will be high school kids, and two or three, let's bring in some kids from the portal from another school that are already college players. And then they'll come in and they'll compete. And it's just like any other transfer. And if you don't want to compete for your spot in the starting lineup or on the roster, well, I don't know if I want you on my program anyways. If you're unhappy that we're continuing to bring in good talent, if it's not costing someone directly their spot on the team, right, then I don't know if you should be on my college football team anyways, because I'm always going to want to create competition and bring in good talent. I view it as like a side hustle. You have your regular job, and maybe you want to earn some extra cash on the side, so you Uber at night. For me, that's a transfer portal. I'm always keeping an eye out. I'm looking in there, seeing if anybody can help. I'm not going to kick somebody off my team or strip them of their scholarship for somebody in the transfer portal. But if I have a spot open and there's somebody in there that I think is worth taking a shot on that maybe could help me, why not? What's the downside to giving it an opportunity? It may not work, but you know what? Any kid you recruit out of high school, they too may not work out for you. We have no idea until it actually happens. I would certainly try to take advantage of the transfer portal. All the other top programs are. And they're reaping the benefits. We'll wrap up your Wednesday. When we come back, get ready for Game 2 of the World Series tonight. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
A funky finish to your Wednesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And as always, it allows me to remind you that the show can also always be listened from anywhere in the world. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can download that free app today. Allows you to listen to the show from anywhere in the world and also on demand. The podcasts are available in the app, online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, or, again, wherever you find your podcast, just search ESPN Radio Charleston. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 11 different states and 3 different countries on this Wednesday afternoon. Not sure if we have any listeners in Delaware today. Oh, one of only 3 states rooting for the Astros for whatever reason in this World Series, and the my least enjoyable state of the time spent in the various states throughout this country.
So Wayne and Garth were right when it was just like nothing to Delaware. It was like, all right.
Exactly.
We're in Delaware.
Yeah, that's all it was. That's about it. I think they have a couple of nice beach areas, but that's about it. Not much in Delaware. And apparently, they're pulling for the Astros. Get them out of here. Now, Game 2 of the World Series is tonight. You can hear it right here on ESPN Radio. Teams that have won the first 2 games of any playoff series, not World Series, any playoff series, teams that have won the first 2 games of said series have gone on to win those series 74 out of 88 times. So if the Braves win tonight, history tells us you got about an 80% chance of finishing this thing off. And you have Max Fried on the mound tonight. Let's see if the Braves can take a 2-0 lead back to Atlanta. Coach's show is on the city tonight, 102.1 FM, starting at 7 p.m. and can be streamed online all across the world. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.